going to continue on in our series on the book of Nehemiah. And if you bear with me, with this cold that I've got going on, I'll try not to get too noisy in the mic where you can hear all of that. I will say that as I was multitasking, doing a variety of things up here, go from hitting the wrong button to going, well, I'll just let Josh do all the announcements, to actually telling him not to do the offering, but to put the mic down because I was letting them use a separate mic so that they didn't get sick. But since nobody else is coming up here, I can touch them both. And so I'm like, we'll get our act together. Nothing like doing everything with professionalism and excellence. Hopefully I at least look good today. I may not sound good. I may be hitting wrong buttons, but none of that really matters at the end of the day. What really matters is, was Jesus here and did you encounter him? So we'll see how I may. There's no telling how long I'll preach. I'm not even going to say anything about that. Nehemiah chapter 2. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse number 11. So I came to Jerusalem and was there for 3 days. And I got up in the night, I and a few men with me. I did not tell anyone what my God was putting into my mind to do for Jerusalem. And there was no animal with me except the animal on which I was riding. It's a little specific there. I didn't even take an entourage of animals, just me and my animal. So I went out at night by the valley gate in the direction of the Dragon's Spring and on to the Dung Gate. And I was inspecting the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which had been consumed by fire. Then I passed on to the Fountain Gate and the King's Pool, but there was no place for my mount to pass. So I was going up at night by the ravine and inspecting the wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. However, the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, nor had I as yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who were doing the work. Then I said to them, "You see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates have been burned by fire. Come, let's rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a disgrace." And I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. Then they said, "Let's arise and build." So they put their hands to the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked us and despised us and said, "What is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" So I answered them and said to them, "The God of heaven will make us successful. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no part, right, or memorial in Jerusalem." I want to preach for the next little while on this thought, a divine plan, a divine plan. God bless you. You may be seated. There is a phrase that is somewhat common today. It was maybe most popularized by Simon Sinek, I believe, and is this: begin with the end in mind. Know what it is that you are wanting to accomplish, and then you work backwards from that ending goal, that ending place, and you then figure out your plan. You figure out how you are going to accomplish the task at hand or the goal that you have set or whatever it is that you have in mind for the end. No one would come up with the Jericho battle plan. There's nobody that I can imagine anywhere in history that would have studied warfare or would have ever heard stories of battles that were fought and would have approached the city of Jericho and said, well, here's what we want to do. We want to have the walls just fall into the ground. And so I think the best way to accomplish the walls of Jericho falling down are for us to get together and to walk silently around the city one time every day for 6 days. No noise, just everybody in the whole army and maybe even all of the people. We're just going to walk around the city. And on the seventh day, let's just up the ante. Let's ramp up our efforts. We're going to go 7 times around the city. And when we get done, we're going to blow the trumpets and the walls are just going to fall down. That doesn't fit in any battle plan ever. But it's what happened. And it's what works. And it worked because it was a divine plan. It wasn't just the invention of Joshua and his other right-hand men that were going, let's come up with this strategy. This is how we're going to accomplish defeating the city of Jericho. We're just going to march around. Nobody would come up with that plan. Nobody would start with the end goal of seeing Jericho destroyed and the walls falling down and come up with that. There are stories that I could tell from the Bible or in other places where people had plans and God would change their plan and he would change their process because he was ultimately in charge and his plans are always better than my plans and his plans are always better than your plans. You may be the best planner there is, but God's plans are much better than your plans. His thoughts are not our thoughts, and his ways are not our ways. And what he knows exceeds far beyond what you and I can know and comprehend. Therefore, he who knows everything knows the best plan for our situation and our circumstance. The writer of Proverbs would say this, trust in the Lord with all of your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all of your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your path. It is God who is going to lead us ultimately when we put our trust in him and not in ourselves, when we lean on him and not on our own understanding, when we seek him for what we need instead of trying to come up with our best option. We are often guilty. Maybe I'll say it this way. I am often guilty trying to change it, but I have been guilty of going to Jesus last. Coming up with plans and processes and then going, all right, God, we need your direction. I've already got my plan out, Lord. Here's my plan. And what I'm really wanting is God to bless what I have done. Instead of trying to find what God is blessing. I was listening to a sermon today. And I actually, I mean, this song will make you cry and weep. And go to the altar. And it's an old song. When you've tried everything and everything has failed, try Jesus. When you've tried everything and everything has failed, and try Jesus. And this is what he was saying. That's why I bring it up now. Try Jesus instead of everything else. I'm guilty of waiting till everything else fails and everything else doesn't work to go, all right, Jesus, what's your plan? What's your idea? Instead of going to him and saying, I need a plan. I need a direction. I need you to speak into the situation and the circumstance. Instead of me figuring out, I should just let him figure it out because his ways are always better and his plans are always better. Does God just sometimes just drop a plan on you? Maybe. But most often it happens when we seek him and when we are asking him for direction, when we are asking him to work in our situation and circumstance. Everybody in this room, you're intelligent human beings. But the key piece of that is not your intelligence, it's the fact that you're human beings. And so the best that you can come up with is a human plan but a divine plan is often what is needed. I want to address this idea and this concept that God's call requires His help. Therefore, you and I must seek and follow a divine plan. If His calling and His direction requires His help to accomplish it, then we need to know what it is He wants us to do. And we need to not just know, but we need to follow His plan. We need to put it into action. We need to do what it is that He wants us to do after we discover what He wants us to do. That seems relatively simple, doesn't it? Ask God, let Him tell you, do what He says. But we fail to do that. Nehemiah, however, did not fail to do that. And there are some principles about the divine plan of God that I want to address from this passage that I read to you earlier. The first principle is this, is that a divine plan is not given to everyone. And let me just say this, it's not that God will not give you a plan, but not every plan is given to everyone. God can give you a plan for your situation and your circumstance that He may not give to me. He may not give to your neighbor, but He is a man, He is a person who gives us, a God who gives us a divine plan. He just doesn't share it with everybody all the time. And so for Nehemiah, he comes to Jerusalem. He's there for 3 days. And in the middle of the night, Nehemiah, he has yet to tell the people why he's there. He's gotten letters from the king. He's made his journey. He's now in Jerusalem. He waits for the third day, and then he gets up in the middle of the night. And he doesn't tell them what God has already placed in his mind. He doesn't tell them what God is speaking to him and what God has been dealing with him for the past 4+ months, the 4 months he waited from hearing about Jerusalem to talking to the king to the time it took him to travel. It's probably some 6 months or more since he first started praying about this situation. And God had been putting some things in his mind, but he doesn't tell anybody. And he goes out on an expedition around the city. You see various gates mentioned here. There are 12 gates in the city of Jerusalem. This text does not list them all. They are listed within the confines of the book of Nehemiah. The officials don't know where he's going. The Jews don't know where he's going. The priests don't know where he's going. The nobles don't know where he's going. He's just out doing a nighttime excursion looking over the situation. Understand this, that although God's plan is not always given to everyone, it does not mean you can't receive a plan for you and for your situation, for what God has called you to do. In fact, if God calls you to do something, He will give you a plan for it. If you are facing a situation and a circumstance, He will give you a plan for how you deal with it. He may not give it to me. I would just tell you this. If He gives you something, it will line up with His word. He's not going to violate His word to give you some plan or something that you're supposed to do, but He will give you a plan. And in situations and settings like we're in here, God works through leadership. And for Nehemiah, God has called him specifically to be the catalyst for the rebuilding of the walls of the city. And so God gives him the plan because God works through leaders. And sometimes God's vision and God's plan needs to be kept quiet until the proper time. Nehemiah doesn't just run out and say, here's why I'm here, this is what we're going to do. He's waiting until the proper time. I would tell you, for you personally, when God gives you a plan, it doesn't mean you should grab the microphone and start telling everybody your plan. Wait for the proper time. Wait until God gives you the release to share what it is that you're wanting to do. When we... This is not how you should do this. I'm going to just tell you. So don't follow my example if you're married. So when General Cobb, I'll use this story because this is about the proper time, the proper way. General Conference 2016, God speaks to me on Thursday night. I get back to the room. My wife was not in service that night. Anna had blisters on her feet from on her heels. We were doing a lot of walking there in Indianapolis, and so they weren't in service. But when I got back to the room, my wife's pretty observant. She knew something had happened. It's late at night. It's well after midnight. I had to get up early and do stuff the next day, and because I was mostly working at General Conference, and we don't get a chance to talk. Friday comes and goes, and in service, she tells me something at the altar call on Friday night. She tells me something. She didn't tell me that God had spoke that to her on Wednesday, I think it was. So she just tells me something as we're up to the front praying. We don't have a conversation. She doesn't even know what it means. She just knows this is what God told her to tell me. So she tells me. And Saturday, we're eating lunch with some friends before we left Indianapolis. And I started asking my friend about a couple of things near where he lived. And I'm talking to him, and his wife hears what I'm saying. And she's like, "Are y'all coming to start a church?" And it wasn't Kansas City. "Well, I don't know." And so they start trying to be like, "Yeah, you need to come and start a church here." Da, da, da. And my wife hears for the first time that God had spoke to me on Thursday about doing Metro Missions. It wasn't the right time for me to, but I'm impatient. So I wasn't even there to share it. I was just asking some questions. But my questions gave away what God was already speaking to me. I would just tell you, there's a proper time and a place to share the plan. God doesn't just give it to everybody. So you have to wait until he says, this is what you need to do, and this is who you need to tell, and this is when you need to tell them. Wait for the proper time. Too soon can undermine it. And my beloved wife, who knows me so well, she's like, "We're not doing that. He's talked about this before." Too soon can undermine it, and too late can miss the window. But you need it in the proper time. The second principle is this: a divine plan allows for research. Divine plan allows for research. Nehemiah, he goes off to the valley gate. And he goes by the dragon spring and the dung gate, and he's inspecting the walls. He's looking over the situation. He's seeing the problem. He's seeing what's wrong. He's seeing, well, this is what we could do, and this is how we could fix it. He's getting a firsthand account of what's really going on. He's heard about it. Some 6 months before, he heard about the status of the city, and now he's going and he's checking it out for himself. The gates are broken. They're consumed with fire, and he goes by the fountain gate, the king's pool, goes up the ravine, and then comes back to the valley gate again. Part of his path is blocked off. He can't even get to where he needs to go because of the rubble and because the walls have been closed in. What all does that mean? It means this, that sometimes God allows us to do research. He doesn't just write it out for us. He's like, go and check it out. He doesn't lay out every aspect of the plan and process. Sometimes he does, but other times he says, go and look at it. See what the need is. See what the problem is. Get a firsthand accounting of what it is. And then ask the right questions. God, what do you want me to do? And how do you want me to do it? And when do you want me to fix it? God, I see the problem. Research is needed to know the extent and the possibilities. Research, I would say this, should be as personal as possible. God has spoken different things to me at different times, said, this is what I want you to do. So I start digging. I start doing research. I start figuring it out. When God called us to Olathe, I came here for a visit. I had been in Olathe some 25 years before, just at somebody's house. Totally looked different than when I had been here before. Spent the night in the city, drove around the city, drove around just about every street in the city. Did some research online, talked to the school system, and, oh man, we can do this and we can do that. And then God starts tweaking it. I did my research, and then God starts tweaking the plan and changing the plan and molding the plans. And, oh, this is what I want you to do. This is how I want you to do it. And he just reveals it in time. But it doesn't mean that I'm just going to sit back. All right, God, when you get it all done, you tell me, and I'll just step in. A divine plan allows for research, and I would say it should include research. You should look into what the options are so that you can pray an informed prayer. God, this is what I see. What do I need to do? How do I need to do it? Third principle is this. It rectifies an obvious situation. Verse 17, Nehemiah would say, you see the bad situation we're in. Everybody can see the problem. Everybody can see what's going on here. Everybody can see this is a sad state of affairs. In fact, he actually uses this. It's a disgrace, and we don't want it to be any longer a disgrace. Everyone can see the problem, but not everyone has faith for a solution to the problem. And God sometimes calls men and women who have faith for a solution to the problem, men and women of God who are going to be faithful to step up and say, here am I, send me. I will step in. I will allow you to use me to fix the problem. I will allow you to use me to work in this situation. It takes faith to rectify an obvious situation, because it wouldn't be a situation if everybody could just step in and fix it. And not everyone believes the vision can be accomplished. Whatever God is calling you to do, or whatever God is speaking into your particular situation, not everyone believes it can even be accomplished. There's only been one time in my life that I'm really aware of where I even questioned whether God could fix something. But the rest of it is just like, yeah, he can do whatever. God, I'm ready. This is a problem. If you want to use me to fix it, great. If you want to use somebody else, that's fine. But Lord, this needs to be done. Jesus would say, the fields are already white. They're ready for harvest. But the laborers are few. Pray the Lord of the harvest that he would send forth laborers. It's not that they can't see. Sometimes they're not willing to act. It's not hard to see the lost people in our city. They're everywhere you look, everywhere you go. They'll be at the table next to you at lunch. It'll be the cashier at the grocery store. It'll be your classmates at school. It'll be your coworkers on the job. The fields are white already to harvest, but the laborers are few. The situation is obvious, but not everyone is willing to step up. Fourth principle is this, as I hurry. A divine plan requires divine favor. And I told them, verse 18, how the hand of my God had been favorable to me. And also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. Nothing of eternal significance happens without God's help. Nothing of eternal significance happens without God's help and without God's favor. The things that are important in our world and seem to be important in our culture, they will come and they will go. But eternal significance is the hearts and lives of people that need the gospel of Jesus Christ. The things of eternal significance are what it is that you and I do for God. It is the only thing that will last. And Nehemiah, who is doing the work and the will of God, building the walls of Jerusalem, which you can still see today, Those walls are not necessarily of eternal significance, but the call of God was eternal, had eternal significance for Nehemiah. And the hand of God was favorable on him so that he could accomplish the task that God had given him. And the reason it requires divine favor is this, is because if you don't need God's help, then you get the glory. But if it takes God's help and it takes his favor and it takes his blessing, if it takes God to be at work, then guess who gets the glory? It all goes to him, because all you are is a willing vessel. You're just a tool that you allow him to use you to do accomplish his purpose and do the work that he has called you to do. God always is about getting the glory. He does not share his glory with you or with me. If you're going to do a work for him, you've got to have his favor. And God's favor was displayed through human favor as well. Nehemiah would say, the king spoke favorable words. But at the end of the day, it's not because Nehemiah was such a great cupbearer. It wasn't that Nehemiah was such a great blessing and benefit to the king. That wasn't why he had the king's favor. He had the king's favor because God was with him, and because God was working through the king to see that Nehemiah was able to accomplish what God had called him to do. Some of you may be up against situations and circumstances where you think that they're impossible, but nothing is impossible with God. And your situation and circumstance, it needs divine favor. It needs God to work. But you also need human favor, because humans are going to make some of the decisions that are going to affect your life. And you need God to work in them so that they give their favor to you. That's really an extension of what God is trying to accomplish. A divine plan requires divine favor. Fifthly, the divine plan requires righteous participation. The second half of verse 18, they said, let's arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work. The work of the kingdom is not a one-man show. It's not a one-person effort. It's not the result of one individual. The work of the kingdom is a kingdom effort. Seldom are even significant pieces and aspects of the work of the kingdom the result of one person. No matter how much an individual can be lauded for their accomplishments are not done in a vacuum. It's the people that came before, and it's the people that worked with them and the people that worked alongside them that ultimately result in what it is that they've accomplished. Or maybe I could say it this way, what God has accomplished through them. We are called to be part of the body of Christ, and every member is valuable. Every member is valuable. The person sitting on the row next to you is valuable. The person across the aisle is valuable to the kingdom. Everyone in this room is valuable to the kingdom, and even those who are not able to be here today for a myriad of reasons, they are valuable to the kingdom of God. And everybody has a part to play in the kingdom. And the plan of God, or the vision that God gives the people, it may start with one person, but God's vision requires God's people. I mean, it would be pretty silly for me to come to Olathe, start a church, and just say, I don't need anybody, I'm just going to come up, I'm just going to preach, and we'll see what happens. Nothing's going to happen. It requires people. It requires participation. It requires people to get involved. Daniel, it requires setup teams and teardown teams. It requires unloading the trailer. it requires even the more difficult part of loading it up after you're done. At least before, you're like, man, we're going to have a good church today. After you're done, it's like, man, we're going to do this again. It takes people, God's people, participating in God's vision and God's calling. Now, I realize in certain things, and I'm trying to balance between a general plan and maybe say it this way, a corporate plan and a individual plan. But even in your lives and in your situations, whatever circumstances you may find yourself in, you need people to help. You need people to work alongside. You need people to be there for you. Oh, it's my problem. Yeah, but we're part of the body. What can we do to help? How can we participate? Oh, I've already got a plan. Yeah, great. Can we join in? Can we help? Can we work? Can we do something on your behalf? And I realize not everything requires a whole lot of people. I get that. But it does require somebody. It requires somebody to be there for you, somebody to support you, somebody to work alongside with you in accomplishing what God has given. And it is the responsibility of the leadership to cast the vision. It's the responsibility of the people of God to catch the vision. Nehemiah said, you know what the problem is. You can see it for yourself. But this is what we're going to do. We're going to rebuild the walls and we're going to put up new gates. We're going to make our city no longer a disgrace. And the people said this, let us arise and build. And so they put their hand to the work. God's people in Jerusalem that day, they caught the vision. They're like, man, I don't think this is possible. I don't know that we can do it. They just said, hey, we can do it because God is with us. Nehemiah had already said, God's favor, give me this and this and this. We can do what God has called us to do because his favor is on it. And the people of God said, let us arise and build. God's people must participate, not spectate. There's a whole lot of fans, football teams yesterday, that lost in the playoffs, 49ers being one of those. I was pulling for the 49ers, Joshua. For those of you who don't know, he's from the Bay Area, California. And this is common language. We lost yesterday. Your team ever lost and you put that we in there? Talking about the Chiefs, like, man, we didn't make the playoffs. We didn't have anything to do with it. We won the Super Bowl! No, they won the Super Bowl. And I'm okay with saying we won the Super Bowl, but they lost. If it doesn't go well, it's all them. We're just fans. We're just spectators. We have no bearing on what goes on that field. We have no input on the outcome of a game. Nothing we do is making any difference at all. We're just spectators. But we cannot be spectators in the church of the living God. We are called to be participants. I know you were expecting us and me to say we're supposed to be participators, but we're called to be participants. I'm not even sure participator is a word. It might be. God has called us to get involved in his kingdom. God has called us to work in his kingdom. God has called us to catch the vision of what God is trying to do in any given scenario, in any given location, and say, this is where we're going. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to reach the lost. We're going to make disciples. We're going to share the gospel. We're going to plant churches. We're going to be involved in the kingdom. We're not just going to show up and say, man, I hope we have a good service today and pastor doesn't hit the wrong button again. But we're going to reach our city with the gospel of Jesus Christ. We are going to make disciples of the nations. We are going to plant churches and we're going to repeat the process. You can be involved and you must be involved in the kingdom. It is not a spectator sport. You must be a participant. The pathway that you will find on the website and you will hear in First Steps and other places, connect, grow, serve, and go and repeat. Connect people to Jesus and the church. Grow in relationship with Jesus and with others. Serve in the kingdom and the world. Go and make disciples and share the gospel and repeat that process as the people you're sharing with. You get them connected to Jesus and connected to the church so they can grow in relationship with Jesus and his body so that they can serve in the church and the world. And then they can go and share the gospel with somebody else so they can then connect to the church and to Jesus Christ and the new birth. And you just repeat the process. It's being involved in the kingdom. But not everybody likes that. Which is why the sixth principle is this. A divine plan anticipates opposition. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked us and despised us. And they said, "What is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" And so I answered them and said, "The God of heaven will make us successful. We're going to do our part, but ultimately the God of heaven is going to make us successful. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and we will build, but you have no part, right, or memorial in Jerusalem." Understand, you and I have an enemy. It is not the person sitting next to you, but we have an enemy. It's not even your boss on the job, but we have an enemy. We have the same enemy that Nehemiah had. It's just a different face. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in the heavenly places. We have an enemy that would seek to keep us from doing the will and the work and the plan of God and fulfilling his calling on our lives corporately and individually. Understand, the enemy is mostly talk, but he is not toothless. His bark is bigger than his bite, but he does bite. Which is why you need to understand, resist the devil and he will flee from you. You just stay away from him as much as possible and understand this: greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. In the end, we win and the enemy will be defeated. God will enable us to perform his will, and the plan he has prepared for you will be fulfilled. You can be victorious. Would you stand together with me? God's call requires his help. So we must seek and follow a divine plan. The six principles of this plan, it's not given to everyone. It does allow for research. It rectifies an obvious issue. It requires divine favor. It requires righteous participation and anticipates opposition. The first and foremost, though, part of the divine plan of God is this. More important than the task that he may have for someone to do, or the calling that he may place on someone's life to work for him, the first and foremost and most important divine plan for your life is the plan of salvation. Without that, nothing else really matters. Without following that plan of salvation, God's probably not giving you any other plans, because he gives plans to those who are his disciples. He works in and for those who are his followers. It's not that he does not work in others. It's not that he does not utilize others. But you can just have no assurance of God's favor and blessing and his work in your life and him giving you what you need to accomplish his task if you're not truly following him. So how is it that you apply that divine plan of salvation to your life? You must understand the gospel is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. That Jesus lived a perfect, sinless life. He went to the cross to pay the penalty for sin, not for his sin, but for my sin and for yours. He took the stripes on his back and he had the crown of thorns on his head and he was beaten. He was whipped, slapped and punched, beard plucked, nails driven through his hands and feet and a spear in his side. He did that not because he deserved it, but because you and I deserved it. You and I deserve to die that kind of death, but not only that kind of death, but to spend an eternity in hell. So the first part of the gospel is you just got to have faith that what Jesus did, he did it for you. You got to choose to apply what he did for you, repenting of your sins. It's not just saying I'm sorry, but that's part of it. God, I'm sorry, but I'm also turning from what I've been doing to turning toward you. Having your sins washed away in the waters of baptism and being filled with the wonderful gift of the Holy Spirit, evidence with speaking a language you don't know. If you haven't made the decision to follow Jesus, today needs to be that day. If you haven't decided to turn from your sin, today needs to be that day. If you've never had your sins washed away in the waters of baptism and had his name applied to your life, today needs to be that day. If you've never received the wonderful gift of the Holy Spirit, evidence of speaking a language you don't know, today needs to be that day. Because at the end, that's the most important plan. In the end, that's the plan that has the most significance. Whether you get out of your difficult situation or circumstance, it doesn't really matter in the big scheme of things, but whether you make it to heaven or not, that really does matter. Whether we plant 100 churches or only this one, all of that really means nothing if we ourselves are not walking with Jesus and aren't saved. So you got to get first things first. So what kind of divine plan do you need? I don't know. I couldn't even offer all of the situation and circumstances. But I could tell you, God does have good plans for you. Whatever you need, he has a plan for it. Whatever he's called you to do, he has a plan for it. Whatever you're feeling led to do, he has a plan for it. You just got to seek him. You just got to talk to him. You just got to ask him to reveal it in his time. But what are we doing as a church? I can tell you what we should be doing. We should be reaching our friends, our relatives, our associates, our neighbors with the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is his divine plan, is to share the gospel with everybody we come in contact with. It is his plan for us to reach our city, not just 0.5%, not 1%, not 10%. His desire is for us to reach a whole lot more than is in this room today. His desire is for us to reach a whole lot more than our own, our rotation of people who call this their church home. But it takes reaching one friend and one relative, one associate, one neighbor with the gospel, and then reaching another one, and then reaching another one, and then reaching another one. And when you reach enough of them, you reach your city. He is calling us to plant new churches. This is not the end. This is just the beginning. It's not a call to come and have one lighthouse in Olathe, but it's a call to plant multiple lighthouses around our city, places where people can find the gospel of Jesus Christ. They can find an encounter with Him that would change their life and change their eternity. It will change their destiny. It's been said over and over, the darker the night, the brighter the light. It is dark out there, but God has called us to be a light in our city. God has called you to be a light on your job. God has called you to be a light in your school. God has called you to be a light in your apartment complex or in your neighborhood. Wherever you are, God has called you to be a light. And then when we begin to congregate together, it creates not just one little candle, but it creates a great lighthouse where people can find Jesus Christ and change their lives, change their eternity, change their destiny. He has good plans. I'm going to invite you to come step out of your pew. I don't know what you need personally. I don't know where you are individually. I know some of your stories. I know some of your current situations. But even if there's nothing going on in your life, you need God to work in your life. You need God to give you direction for tomorrow, and you need God to give you direction for the next step of your journey. You need God just to speak into you and say, God, I'm here for whatever you want. God, I want you to call me. I want you to direct me. I want to do a work for you. Come on, would everybody come? I don't want just a few, but everybody needs to step out. Everybody needs to surrender their hearts and lives to Jesus and say, God, I want to be what you want me to be. I want to hear your voice. I want to follow your plan.